Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
And there's our first edit spot after that last comment. Okay. One day we're going to get in trouble, Russ.
I know.
You know, we shoot the shit here before the start of the show. I've always told Steve, just record it. You know, you might get a few gems. And so I've got my pen in hand, you know, trying to make notes going, okay, because we've got to promote the show. And there's four of them right here that I'm going, okay, we can't put that on. How are you, Rusty?
I'm good, bud.
Good. Good afternoon, everybody. This is another recording, of course, of the Suspendables weekly podcast with me and Russ Cortinel. And this week is no exception. Rusty, you've moved up to Victoria.
Yes.
For the summer, and you're selling real estate up there. Mm-hmm. And people ask me about it when I put out questions. They go, What's Russ selling up there?
James Island. Yeah, we're actually, we're still waiting on subdivisions. So we're marketing the properties, but we can't close yet. So we're just taking reservations. Yeah. So I was out there 2 days. I was out there Friday and Saturday. I was out there playing golf and hanging with a friend, an ex-hockey player who's reserved a lot. And he's an Edmonton boy.
Maybe you went back to work after you almost got in a mixer with your brother last week. You said, I better stay away from the golf club. Nice show we had last week with Ron Chipperfield. Thanks a lot, Ronnie, for coming on. Boy, interesting guy, Rusty. Ronnie was one of the first captains of the Oilers in Wayne's second year. So we thought we'd bring him on. He had a lot of interesting things to say about it. But he's one of the rare guys, Rusty. You hear all the time, guys who did play in the NHL who end up going to Europe to play, but they don't last very long over there. They might play a year or two or, you know, and come back either when their career's winding down or they can't quite get into the NHL, so they head over there. But he stayed there his whole life.
He went
to Italy and 20-plus years he spent there. And like I said, you don't often hear that, Russ.
No.
Most guys end up staying here. So. And he was an agent. If you want to go back and listen to the show, he was an agent. He was a general manager and a good player.
90 goals in junior. Unreal.
Yeah, unreal player in junior. So on the show this week, we got a few questions for you that we didn't get to. Someone wants to know about your days in Minnesota. They say you don't talk about them very often. We've got heckling, Rusty. The PGA was at the forefront this week with that FedEx Cup.
Yeah.
And I don't think it works, that FedEx Cup. And I got to ask Rusty about this thing with the big cash and the cachet that it's that's supposed to go with it. But I think it's a failed project, that FedEx Cup. What else we got? Would you ever consider a front office job? Is a question from KP. There's a Netflix doc. I don't know if you saw it yet, Russ, but you should watch it. It's called Untold: Crime and Penalties. And this is a story of a guy who was a gangster, real story, in Connecticut. I don't have the names, of course. And he ended up, he had a trash collection business. Mm-hmm. Go figure. Gangster with trash collection business. And he was, you know, got to launder a bunch of money. So he bought a hockey team. But he gave the teams, Rusty, to his 17-year-old son.
No.
Yeah, to run it. It kind of starts out like a slapshot thing. Just murderous games. Like, their whole thing was, here's what we're going to do. We're going to kick the shit physically out of every team.
So course, all my friends are talking about this show. They've all told me to watch it. And they're like, we don't want to tell you anything about the show, but you've got to watch it. You've basically covered the whole movie.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, you have. You keep talking.
You just don't. Well, it's a talk show.
Oh, my
show.
God.
I gotta talk. Why are you so mean to me?
Oh, my God. No, I'm not going to tell you. But the 17-year-old son owns the show, owns the team, and it's a shit show, and it's murderous, and there's fights, and okay.
That's the beginning. That's okay. The start of the show.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, check it out. It's on this week.
Let me tell you the ending.
Someone said when you lived in Dallas, Rusty, they met you.
Nice.
And they were really impressed because you had a Porsche 911.
Ooh.
They said, will you ask Rusty about that? What's his favorite car? And is that in fact?
Yeah, I actually bought it off Mike Badano. And I had it. I didn't have it very long. It was an 89. It was a really nice car. Black.
Are you a car guy?
Not really. I'm not. I have had really nice cars. I had a 63 Corvette I had for 10 years. I had the Porsche. I've had some Mercedes. I've had a Bentley. I've had two Ferraris in the last, I don't know how many years I've been driving an Escalade, but I guess I just fucked that up. I am a car guy.
I was going to say, Stevie and I'm going, are you a car guy? Russ? No. I had a Bentley. I had a two Ferraris. I had a 63 fucking Fett.
I'm going through the cars, I'm like, oh, you idiot. So I want to tell a story. Like the two Ferraris I bought and I had them for 6 months and sold it, made some money. And then the second one I had for about the same amount of time and broke even. And I got it out of my system. I was like, I always wanted one. And my buddy's a broker, right. Tim Kwok's sister in Victoria, great guy. Anyways, he found these cars for me. And the Bentley, I was only going to have, same thing. I was going to buy it for 6 months and then sell it. And I fell in love with it. It was my favorite car I've ever had. I ended up keeping that for 10 years, and probably other than maybe the Corvette. But right in the last few years, I could care less. It doesn't matter.
Right.
To me.
Right. My worst
that was,
car.
That's that was I, funny. Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm not a car guy, but I've had. I know.
You sound like when a guy asked me, you know, when you smoke, I don't like to smoke, you know, that off. There's perfect, you know, and he goes, well, when do you like to smoke? You know, I go, well, as soon as I get out of bed. Okay. And then when I have that first coffee in the morning, I got to smoke after I eat, when I'm driving my car, and God, when I'm talking on the phone, when I'm playing golf, okay, we're smoking
just,
all the time.
I don't smoke when I'm sleeping.
Right. That's the only time. The worst car I had, Rusty, bad purchase by me when I worked for Molson here at a company car, I quit the job. And then I had to, I quickly remember, go, oh yeah, the car goes back though. Okay. I had the big Pontiac Parisi. It goes back. So I bought a Pinto station wagon.
Oh,
I was
not
drunk.
A Pinto.
Yeah. I was drunk. And the guy across the street from the bar I drank at was always had a car out in front. He was an auto body guy and he'd always fix up a car. There'd always be one sitting out there for sale. I knew the guy and I went and bought his hammered. And I said, no, it's fine. He said, I got to tell you something about this. God, I trust you. It'll be great. It's minus 35 when I buy it. And I bring it home and get out and going. You know, I lived in an apartment with Glenn Gretzky and, you know, I had a stall, outdoor stall.
Yeah.
And the outlet is there to plug your car in.
For the block heater.
For the block heater. So I got to plug it in. And so I get out of the car. I got my extension cord. I plug it into the outlet. And then I turn around to look at my car and there's no dangly cord there to plug in know, where you have the block heater. So I found out quickly, Russ, I phoned the guy, he goes, well, if you would have listened to me, there's no block heater in that car. So I used to have to, I've told this story before, but the only way to do it, Russ, was a farmer's trick where you get a garbage can lid, you know, full of briquettes,
get
light them up.
Out of here.
I'm not kidding you, Russ. I'm not kidding you. You light them up, you let it calm down, and then you stick it underneath the engine, put a little cardboard around it, and it heats up the block.
Yeah.
Anyway, worst car I ever had.
It's a fire now.
It's like your Bentley. It's kind of like your Bentley. We're going to bring Stevie in here, Russ. I've got to ask you about something. It's in the news this week, hockey. And I don't want to screw it up.
Before we start there, I got the one listener asked to talk about Minnesota.
Yes. Yeah, let's do it.
My only year there was the last year Minnesota was playing there when we moved to Dallas the next year. So right. Everybody knew it. It was in the news. So we were drawing first part of the season. We were really good. And then we just tanked in the second half.
Right.
And ended up not making the playoffs. Yes. And there were so few fans in there because they were so pissed off we were leaving that Shane Chirla is on the bench beside me. And there's his neighbor is across from our bench, the only guy in this section. And he stands up during a commercial break and he yells at Chuck. He goes, "Hey, Charles, do you want to meet at that bar after the game?" And that's how few people were in everybody. And Charles just put his head down and just shaking it like, oh my God. I mean, everybody heard it, you know, "Hey, what so bar funny. Do you want to meet at?"
You must have heard some funny shit coming from fans, Rusty.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
The fans are in the news this week. I'd mentioned the FedEx Cup, and if you've been following golf at all, you know, if I had to rate what are all the big stories in golf, Bryson DeChambeau would be the biggest one, his whole deal with hitting it long. And then it would be this little rivalry between him and Brooks Koepka. I don't know how it started. It's an absolutely stupid thing now where people, they don't like each other.
Right.
Okay, they go on social media. Right, they don't like each other. So the story is, should they be doing that? There's a Ryder Cup coming up. It's become a distraction. And they hate each other so much that when Bryson's hitting his shot, everyone yells, "Hey, Brooks." Brooksy. And it got so out of hand. I liked it. It got so out of hand that the commissioner of the PGA has stepped in and said, if you start saying Brooksy anymore, we're going to kick you out. Yeah. We're going to kick
what
you out.
What a joke.
And I said, well, whatever, oh you know. God. And what do you think of that, Rusty?
I think that's a joke. It's like, you know what?
Athletes. Meaning, meaning it's fine.
Because, I mean, look, there is etiquette to the game of golf where you're supposed to be silent. Tennis, same thing when they're playing. But then when they're walking or, you know, they're not lining up a putt or a shot, it's game on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's funny. I think it's brought a lot of comedy and fun to the game outside of the game,
right,
which we've never probably witnessed before.
Right.
Maybe because of social media now we can hear more things. Maybe there was some stuff way back in the day, but I think it's great. I think as long as they're not doing it when he's about to putt or, you know, hit the ball. But to say, you've got to stop calling him by another name. Oh, my God.
Did you ever see anyone did they ever ask for someone to get kicked out, Russ, in the games you're at for yelling shit?
It was guys who were throwing, if they were throwing stuff, like throwing beers on players. The craziest thing I ever saw was in when I was with Montreal and we were playing an exhibition game in Moscow, and Shane Corson and Mike Keane beat the crap out of these two guys. And then a brawl started and they started throwing vodka
in the
bottles.
Stands, they jumped in?
No, on the ice with the team, like a five-on-five brawl.
Right.
Brian Skruglund sucker punched Tikhon off the coach from our bench. He started leaning over, yelling at Pat Burns, and Brian Skruglund belted him right in the head. It was hilarious. And anyway, but the worst part of that was the fans started throwing vodka bottles and big coins at us, and they had to get us out with armed guards.
Yikes.
Yeah. But that's the only time I think I've seen fans get thrown out of a game when they throw something. They get caught for throwing like a drink or something at a player.
Right.
And then they get escorted out.
Russ, what do you think of speaking of the Brooksy DeChambeau thing, what do you think of this whole FedEx Cup where the big deal is they're going to win $15 million after three golf tournaments when they start it? And I'm of the opinion, it's like, so the final 30 guys get to go shoot off, you know, to tee off for 30 mil. All the guys are billionaires. They don't need status, right? They're all going to be in the PGA for the rest of their life.
You got your black shirt on, but do you have your gray pants and gray jacket on too? You get that.
Why?
What? You got that Soviet what? Union gray suit. You're starting to what? Sound a little communist. Jeez. What? Top 30 players in the world are they've made it based on points and they're playing for a bunch of money. I mean, kind of sounds like every other sport, doesn't it? The top
well,
teams.
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's,
if it you're is in the what, Stanley Cup,
they might not win a lot of money, but every player gets rewarded in a contract after they win. I mean, look at LA Kings. They've got all these old farts that have huge contracts because they won all those cups. Mm-hmm. Chicago's, I mean, it's just, you win, you get paid. So winners win, winners get paid.
Yeah. And what's money now these days, right?
It's like, it's so big, our way, big fella.
Yeah. If you want to, yeah. You take 14 and give us a mil. You can sponsor the show.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Stevie, can you jump in here and explain the Kokanyemi deal? I don't know if you've been following this, Russ.
The breakdown of the contract? I freaking love it.
Okay.
I love it.
Stevie, give us the rundown on it, would you? What happened here?
It's kind of a long story. 2019 is when it starts. Montreal gives an offer sheet to Carolina forward Sebastian Aho. He was a restricted free agent at the time. It's not something that happens very often.
Nope.
Like there's been like four of these in the last 10 years. And when you sign an RFA to an offer sheet, the player's current team has a right to match the offer, and Carolina did, but they obviously were pissed off with Montreal for doing that. So we fast forward to last week. Montreal's right. Got their own RFA in Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Carolina didn't forget that, what the Habs did. So they decided that they would sign Kotkaniemi to a one-year offer sheet worth 6.1 mil, which is outrageous for Kotkaniemi, by the way. And to rub it in, they gave the kid a signing bonus of 20 bucks because number 20 is Aho's number. So the Habs didn't match. They lose Kotkaniemi, the third overall pick from 2018. They get a first and a third round draft pick as compensation. And Montreal turned around immediately and picked up Christian Dvorak from Arizona. I think what fans are asking out of this whole deal, fellas, is why are these offer sheets so rare? Should the players not be pissed off at what looks like kind of collusion, right? To keep them from getting contracts as restricted free agents.
100%.
That's, you took the words right out of my mouth, Steve.
It's exactly what it is. And the unwritten rule in the league is that you don't go after these young kids, because if you do, you got to pay them. And then it just drives up the salary. And so they've made it so difficult that it rarely ever happens. But this is funny. I mean, and the Carolina GM is saying this is, it's about the player. It's not we're not trying to get back at Montreal for what they did to us. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, the $20 signing bonus is hilarious.
Yeah, the guy's jersey.
So you don't think that kid's worth 6.1? I don't know anything. Really know much about him.
He may be, but I mean, keep in mind, Montreal was benching this guy in the playoffs on this proud march to the Cup final. They started out with Kotkaniemi being a healthy scratch for a couple of games. So I don't think Dominic Ducharme, the Habs head coach, is even that big a fan of Kotkaniemi. So I think they gave up a lot.
They did. First round and first and third.
That's right.
First and third and $6 million. They're eating that $6 million this year. Yeah. Wow.
But what they get in that first rounder, they spun that to Arizona to get Christian Dvorak, who at this moment I think is a superior forward to Kotkaniemi. It's just that Kotkaniemi's an unfinished product, James.
Hey, Steve, do you want to do the show next week? We can give Jim a week off.
I was like, the first time we've really talked hockey. Yes. A bunch of hockey. Rusta, yeah. It brings to mind the question of, this is kind of funny.
Better
you
be.
Know, Kevin Lowe got into it with Brian Burke back, I think it was 07. I was talking to Stevie today about it. Dustin Penner, it ended up in the same deal.
Right.
And Kevin was livid. Oh, yeah. Burke, you know Berkey. Mm-hmm. And he got vocal about it. Go, I tell him to relax. You know, that's just the way it goes. Oh. And they wanted to kill. They wanted to kill each other. The ugly word collusion, Rusty, comes up from time to time. What's kind of, you know, I guess the letter of the law is you can't talk to anyone. GMs can't talk to each other, Russ, before a deal's done or until they are restricted or unrestricted. You know, you're not allowed to. Yet that doesn't seem realistic. Well, is it, Russ?
How much goes on? I mean, geez, the fines are probably pretty steep if you get caught. And with technology today, boy, I just don't see how they could or want to get in trouble like that. But signing these RFAs is, you know, legal, and they've got the rules set up so they can happen, but it's so expensive. So the funny story I heard about Penner, you know, he went to Edmonton and didn't really pan out. He's making $5.5 million at that time, was huge mm-hmm. money, still mm-hmm. is huge money. But for him, it was really expensive. I think they signed him to like a 5-year deal, $25 or $28 million bucks. And the captain, an assistant captain on the team, really good European player. He was in charge of the fine money. Mm-hmm. So he was going around to each player, and Joey Moss would follow him, and then the guys would give Joey the money, I guess. And he's reading out each of the guys who were fined. And he goes, you owe $500 for being late for practice last week. And he goes to the next guy, you owe $250 for that bad penalty you took last night. Penner, you owe us $28 million and 2 first round draft picks. And I guess the boys just freaking lost it.
That is so funny.
Oh my God. I love that story so much. It was great. Yeah.
One of the great, and you're all about the business deal. You're a great negotiator. You know, you're really good at business and sales. And, you and I have a mutual buddy in Bill Comrie.
Oh God.
Who owned and ran the Brick for many years. And yeah. His sons were both good players mm-hmm. from his first wife, Mike and Paul.
And his two other kids were good hockey players too.
Really good. Yeah. Ones. Eric and Tristan. Yeah. I think it's Tristan. Yeah, they had a good run. Well, Eric's still playing. Good goaltender.
Yeah.
Anyway, Billy was in the furniture business, and he's got some hilarious stories about doing business. You know, yeah. he started selling beds in his garage, and now he's a billionaire. Literally. Okay, now he's a billionaire. There was a guy he worked with, Rusty, who was notoriously cheap, okay? And they kind of split up, and this guy had a no competitive clause, you know, for 5 years or something. And no compete. So what he did though was, you know, there's furniture shows, and that's where these guys go do all their buying, right? Mm-hmm. When they come up, and there's, you know, they take place around the world, and this guy would follow Bill secretly to all these furniture shows because Bill was so successful, and he would buy whatever Bill did. Okay, so he'd watch Bill at this booth. He'd see him sign. Okay, give us 7,000 of those freaking coaches.
Yeah,
and this guy would go in behind. He'd go, What'd he buy? But he was really cheap, this guy, right? And so he ends up buying this couch. Okay, that's going to be a big seller. And being cheap and a slow payer and all that stuff, he ordered it, comes by the train car. He got his order. It sold out right away. Mm-hmm. Okay, it sold out right away. And about a month later, he ordered another train car full of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, Brian was the name of this guy. And it wasn't showing up. Right. And so he called the manufacturer. He said, hey, this is Brian. Where's my second train car of furniture? And the guy said, I'll tell you where it is. It's right here. We're happy to send you that second train car when you fucking pay us for the first train car. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And the guy ends up, there's a pause. And the guy says, yeah, I can't wait that long. Cancel the order.
Oh my God.
Calling himself on what a slow payer he was.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, hilarious business story. A couple questions here, Rusty boy.
Oh, you're looking good today, bud. I have to say, when I did see you, you're looking sharp. You look like you're back on the market and over the
I'm cop. Back, yeah. I'm going to put myself out there. I got my daughter. I live alone, single.
Yeah, we all know.
My daughter's like, hey, Dad, let's set you up with a dating profile.
Ooh.
I said, well, maybe. I'm a little backed up, Russ. I said, maybe it's time.
Yeah, jeez.
Not going to happen. Thanks for the shout out, Neil Fernie. He's been tough on you, actually. Some of the stuff he says about you, I don't even want to tell you, but he can't be nice. I see this as one of Rusty's strengths when he gave us some barbecue tips. He liked it. And he said, I want another barbecue tip from Russ.
Well, not if he hasn't been nice.
Yeah, okay. No barbecue tip for you. Forget him.
I've been doing a lot of bone marrow lately.
What's that?
Bone marrow.
You need a bone marrow?
No. I've been cooking a lot of it lately. You just put it in the oven for 20 minutes at 400 with a little salt on it. And bone then grill sourdough bread with butter and garlic salt and put the bone marrow on top of that, baby. So
where
good.
Do you get bone marrow?
There's a little grocery store here in Oak Bay that they sell it.
Jesus.
And a lot of people probably use it in soups and stuff, but I
gross.
No, it's really good. And I can't find it in LA. I've got to search for it. So it's inexpensive and a great appetizer.
There we go.
Made it last night. Then I did rack of lamb.
Love rack of lamb. Can you make me chops, Rusty? Can you make me a nice lamb chop?
Yeah, I can do that.
I'm going to have that tonight. West Grove Farms, speaking of that, says, I was in Italy with Russ and Jeff about 10 years ago, says this guy.
Bruce.
I
don't know. Not Jeff.
I was in Italy with Russ and Jeff.
Bruce and myself were in Italy with this guy. Jeff wasn't in Italy.
Russ fell off the bike and split his bike helmet in two.
Three. I almost freaking died.
Didn't get a single scratch. The guy's like a cat. What's the story there?
Oh, my God. It's gold medal plates at the time. Now it's called the Great Kitchen Party.
Right. We've heard of that. Yep.
Yeah. It's a fundraiser for Olympic athletes. So it's a great event. And I've done it every year and missed the 3 or 4 years I was in Hawaii. But they auction off these trips. So 40 couples from across Canada go to Borgo San Felice in Tuscany for a week. Barney Bentall's there, Jim Cuddy's there, so they're the entertainment. And then some Olympians are there. I was an Olympian and a couple other. And anyways, every morning you bike for 3 hours. There's three groups.
Mm-hmm.
Cappuccino, espresso, and macchiato.
Yeah. Scotch.
And so they go, you know, it's like the beginners, the mid-range people, and then the crazies who are just flying around Italy. So it's 3 hour bike ride. So every year I went 3 years in a row, my third year, I'm really getting into it. So I go out in the espresso group and I'm leading the pack and we ride for an hour and a half, have coffee and then ride for another hour and a half. And I'm coming down these hills and I'm flying and I'm doing about 45 miles an hour.
Yikes.
And I see a girl going the other way up the hill. And I'm like, wow, that's weird. I thought, she's all alone. She's should be in a group. Maybe she's lost. Like it was just a split second. Just look over, miss the sign for a sharp turn. And I start, I hit my back brake and the tire comes around so I can see it right beside me to my left and up in the air. And I, as a kid, I fell a lot. Just playing and riding and whatever. And I learned to tuck and roll. And I went up and I just relaxed and I tucked and I hit my head and I flipped again, hit my head, flipped my head and hit my head. This is serious. So I broke my helmet in three places. And everybody, including myself who saw it, was in shock. And I'm like, I'm okay. And I pick up all my crap. My tire's broken or pop. My handlebar broke in half. Everything's all screwed up. And I wheel the bike off to the side. And the guys catch up to me and they fix up the bike. And they said, do you want a van? I go, no, it's only 20 kilometers more. I'll ride home. So I ride this broken bike home, almost getting another accident because the brakes weren't working that great. But anyways, the crazy part of the story is everybody who was there, who was either a doctor or a cyclist, said I should have broke my neck or died. They couldn't believe it, that acts how fast I was going and how my helmet, I've kept my helmet as a reminder. But the craziest part of the story is that my wife and I were training, going for bike rides in Westlake Village, California, before we went on the trip. Mm-hmm. And she needed some gear to go over there. So she would need extra shorts or a shirt or whatever. So we go into this bike store on our ride. And the guy looks at me and he goes, where'd you buy that helmet? I go, here. And he goes, well, did somebody help you with that? And I go, no. He goes, I just took it out of the box and put it on. He goes, oh my God, it's not, you don't have it on right. So he starts going with a screwdriver. He's doing this, loosening, tightening. And all of a sudden this thing is on my head. And I wore a helmet for my career. I know what it's supposed to feel like.
Right.
And he tightened it up, and this helmet and that, stopping in that store saved my life, because the helmet wasn't on properly, and the helmet never moved on my head. It broke in three places. And if I hadn't have gone in that store, it would have moved and it would have smashed my brains in.
Good God.
I know. Scary. And so me being me, the doctors at the hotel who were on the trip from Canada said, Russ, you got to have your wife wake you up every 2 hours because you're concussed. You've been in shock, and you just were nowhere near a hospital. So just do us a favor and just have her set an alarm for every 2 hours and wake you up. Mm-hmm. So every morning they come down for breakfast.
I wouldn't have woken you up. No.
So every morning we have a breakfast.
Yeah.
Everybody comes down from their rooms. We have the entire Borgo San Felice Hotel to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's all now we're all friends and we're hanging out every night. Barney and Jim Cuddy are playing in the bar and singing away, and their kids are there singing away. And it's just a phenomenal 7 days. Right. So the guy comes up to me at breakfast and he says, so did Paris wake you up? I go, I haven't been to bed yet. I just came from the bar.
The old concussion protocol. Make sure you wake him up every day. Don't worry about that with Russ.
And he just shook his head. He was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's deep. That's deep.
But that was a scary thing. I mean, just talking about it and remembering that fall. Oh, I'm so thankful and lucky that I made it from that accident, because it was brutal.
Tempting fate.
And I haven't been on really. I've been on a bike a couple of times, but I'm done with the bike riding after that fall.
Yeah, I was too. I'm now that you bring that up, you and I know you touch your lucky stars there, right?
You're yeah,
It's like when is it someone's time,
Yeah.
And I had power tools and I almost cut my hand off. Okay. And I did. I almost cut my hand off. It missed the tendon on my thumb, and I'm a golfer and I use my hands a lot. Okay. Yeah. So that one, I rented a moped against all of everyone's opinion. I went to Greece.
Yeah.
Chasing my girlfriend at the time. And then
wife. You're always chasing.
I'm always chasing, man. Rented a moped. They said, be careful, man. The streets are narrow. The locals don't give a shit about you. And I said, I'll be fine. So we're in Santorini. I'm driving down the road to go. We're going to go watch the sunset all day or something up at the end of the island. And so we're driving into town to let all our friends know. We had a bunch of friends there that we're going to be gone for the day. So off I go. I look, but she's on the back, got a halter top. I got my shorts on. I go, and this will be fun. I look forward and there's a guy comes right up from behind a bus that's taking the whole road, and down I go.
Oh, okay. Geez.
I wipe the thing out, wreck the bike. End up in the hospital. Never died, obviously, from it. The shit that I've tempted fate with. I'm going to stop now. I'm going to stop doing. I'm not doing any more risky things.
Yeah.
I'm too old, man. Anyway.
That's crazy.
How
was the girl in the back of the bike?
Well, we ended up 2 days and we got, road rash, man.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And you go into the hospital and there's nine people in front of you with the same thing.
Yeah.
Falling on bikes.
Yeah.
That
popular.
Nothing like a little a bottle of bubbling hydrogen peroxide can't fix when you dump it on your cut. But okay, Rusty, another question here before we go. Would you consider a front office job? Not bad. We've talked to you about coaching and playing and in Europe. And you have done some coaching, but what about, would you ever do a front office thing? Would big challenge, but.
Yeah, it is. I always liked the business side of professional sports and especially mm-hmm. hockey. So if I was ever to do anything, it would be in that regard. But the being a coach or being a general manager, being involved in the team, it is like all consuming. You have no life. And I just never thought of myself as one to just want to be at a hockey rink unless it was for my kid, mm-hmm. All the time. And Jeff Jackson wanted me to partner with him, as an agent, and, he would obviously be the main guy, but he was like, yeah, I'd like you to go to the rink and, you know, scout kids and stuff. And I'm like, mm-hmm. No, not really interested in that, but
not so much.
Just the business side. And, obviously, giving my two cents if I was asked to, about players and stuff and thoughts, but, I talked to Cam Neely quite a bit and it's a full-time gig. I mean, he's in the office every day and he takes a little bit of time off, but I see, you know, his wife Paulina is doing some things with her kids or on her own, and it's cause he's got to be at work. You know, he can't be just taken off all the time. So, it's a tough gig.
Not surprising that he's one of the best guys now.
Exactly.
He's working that hard.
Yeah. The first day he got hired, he made a commitment to the Bruins and, they love him. They absolutely love him. And so they should, because he's run a really good ship there and he's a smart hockey guy.
Rusty, what happens with franchises? One question we had here about guys said stories from Minnesota and then further. Why didn't hockey work in Minnie there for a while, Rusty?
What I was told when I was there was they, the Minnesotans started turning on the NHL because of the high salaries, which weren't high, but they thought they were at the time and didn't agree mm-hmm. with that. And they liked their high school hockey or college hockey better. That's what we were told and we read in the newspaper. And there was this bitterness towards NHL and some thought maybe there was too much fighting. So I think for those collective reasons, they were not wanting to take their kids to those games, but took them to the college games or the high school games. And and then we left. So we leave. And then Gary Bettman would do these he had those games where you would go into potential cities and they were either exhibition or I think they might have even been league games and counted. And so you played mm-hmm. in these different cities and he went back to Minnesota and we played in the basketball stadium downtown. Mm-hmm. And so they obviously knew that there was a chance that they were going to come back. And so they did a great job and they brought a team back, a new franchise. And they've been, I think, really successful. I've been to a couple games there and the fans show up and they love it. So there was a, you know, maybe they missed.
What a crazy story.
I know it is crazy that they left and went back. And I was like, it's not going to work. It didn't, like, I was there when it didn't work and everyone's like, no, they mm-hmm. really want the team back and they want a team back and they're right. And so maybe it took missing it for having a team. Maybe that's it. You know, you don't know what you miss until it's gone. And look at Quebec. They're dying to get a team back and it didn't work there either. Right.
But expansion's working lately.
Yeah. What I'm excited about is that during the pandemic, you know, we didn't know if people were going to come back and watch sports. I mean, do you remember those first few months? It was just so scary because nobody really knew what was going on, but we were scared and thought we were going to run out of toilet paper and life would never be, you know, what we knew it. And the playoffs and the sporting events are freaking packed, and you can just tell that people are super excited to be back to watching sports live. And
right.
And so that's great. And I was worried for Seattle because gosh, they're getting into it right when all this stuff hit the fan. And I was worried right. that, you know, what's going to happen. And it looks like it's going to be really successful. So I'm happy for them because we want these new franchises to do well, and it grows our game. There's more teams, more jobs for players, and more good hockey for fans across this country mm-hmm. and the United States. So the more successful these teams are, like there's people who are bitter about Vegas being too good right off the hop. Well, they paid $500 million for their team, and now Seattle paid $650 million. You've got to give them good players. You can't do it like right. when I was playing, and it took 10 years to build a team because they were, you know, not good players, and they were building through the sure. draft. And now they've got these exciting new teams right off the hop.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point, Rusty, about get careful what you wish for. You know, when people say, well, COVID hit, the protocols were very strict, of course. It was frightening when it started. Still is, you know, with perhaps another variant coming on. And everyone said, that'll be okay, you know, staying at home. We got kids and get to see them and all that stuff. And about 3 months after that, people were going bananas.
Yeah.
That did. And, yeah. you know, outdoor concerts, you know, they've been around for 100 years. I went back to Ottawa. And Ontario had pretty strict stuff going on, and then they relaxed it, and they had my sister's husband, who's in a band, mm-hmm. they went to play an outdoor concert, and it hadn't been around for like 18 months, mm-hmm. and it was on the street, and I went down to watch him, Rusty, and people were jumping around in the streets like the war had just ended.
Yeah, no, you know? It's true.
Like they hadn't been out.
Yeah,
and they, you know, so they were like, "This is the best. Yeah. This is the best." You know, it was. And it's just a outdoor activity, you know. Rusty, the Ottawa Senators got a really goofy owner in mm-hmm. Melnick. I've met him a couple of times. I don't know him personally, but he sure is an eccentric. He's different. He's not popular with the fans. And you know, if would an owner, Russ, you know, an owner with a bad reputation, not for paying. You're going to get paid. You're in the NHL. Would that prevent you, Russ, from going to a team?
I don't think the owner per se. I think it's more how the general manager and the coaches run the team. If you're a free agent, you're gonna look at all those things. And I don't think an owner would have an effect on a player unless other players that are there tell him you don't want to come here because of this and that. And I played, mm-hmm. Norm Green was going through a tough time financially in Minnesota when I was there. And part of the reason he left, he needed to be in a better market to make some money. But he was struggling in his real estate businesses or something like that. But when I got there, Bob Gainey said, you know, we follow the rules of the alumni on food. And so we're really in the bare minimum when we travel. And I went, okay, well, I'm coming from Montreal. Like, it's freaking top notch. Everything's perfect on the road. It's the best, the best, the best.
The menu.
Nice. Our pregame meals, just, they were great. And most teams were like that because we followed each other to the same hotels. So the hotel knew what we expected. Well, when I first got to Minnesota, it was like chicken leg and a little bit of pasta over here and some baked potato. And I'm like, where's the salmon? Where's the steaks? Where's this? Where's the salads? Where's the ice cream? Where's the soups?
Sure.
And then Bob, he quickly took it into his own hands. He goes, no, we can't do this. We're the National Hockey League. And he must have gone to Norm and said, we've got to supply these guys with the right food. And then it changed quickly. But that was an example of an owner, you know, being tight with the purse strings. And
yeah.
And he eventually ended up selling it to a very wealthy guy at the time. And that things changed in Dallas and they started paying the guys.
Right.
So yes, the owner can have an effect, but in this day and age, money wise, you're right. They're going to get paid. But Yeah, if the guy's, you know, if he's out talking in the media and doing crazy things, I don't think it's really going to affect the player's decision.
Not like he's making calling line changes on the phone down to the coach. Right. I mean, they just don't. I think I read this week, like it's, I've asked you this before, but NHL guys are going to be allowed to play in the Olympics. Thank fuck. Otherwise, I'm not watching the Olympics. What do you say, Rusty? You got to have them, right? You got to.
I think it's great. I played in the Olympics, and it's awesome representing your country. And these guys have all done very well by their hard work and their athleticism. So they've all done well. They're making good money. And to go and play for their country and play in the Olympics, I think it's great. I think it's great for their countries and the fans. So I think it's a good thing.
But if you're an owner, Russ, do you like well, it? Like there's
obviously the owners are worried because of the potential of injury, but they have the same potential playing in the NHL. So I know their concerns, their best, and they're worried about them getting worn out and all that stuff. But it's once every 4 years. I think it's fine.
I agree. Rusty, what's one of your favorite stories about a young guy coming in the league? The reason I bring it up, you know, of an 18 or 19 year old, maybe someone you knew personally who made it to the show. You know, what I love about sports are some of these vignettes that they do with guys who get drafted and they're sitting in the living room with their family and everyone's brought to tears. There was a baseball player this week who played in his first major league game and fired a no-hitter. Just amazing. And if you're Canadian, you got to love what's going on at the U.S. Open tennis right now. Three Canadian players.
Wow.
Bianca Andreescu is going to play the fourth round tonight, but the story of going around the whipping around the planet in the tennis world is Leila Fernandez, an 18-year-old Canadian from Montreal. You know, two rounds ago, beat Naomi Osaka, the defending champ, and then beat Kerber. She's 18. Just an absolute treat, absolute treat to watch. Pretty cool. You probably watch a little tennis, Rusty, but her interviews are just glorious. The kid is just soaking it up. She's obviously really good, and she's very small, tiny, and beaten some big players. Love the story.
Yeah, love the story. Love the underdog and love the success for the Canadians and tennis. My wife watches tennis quite a bit, so that's usually when I see it when she's watching. Mm-hmm. She's such a fan, so I get the lowdown from her who's who and what they're doing. I think it's great when Canada has success in tennis. Because it doesn't seem like we have a lot of it over the years, and lately we've been having success, and it's so great. I just incredibly proud of these athletes.
It leads me to the question, and then we'll get out of here, Rusty. You're a veteran, and in walks rookie into the dressing room.
Yeah,
with hype or without hype or whatever. I know you, and you would probably want to help the kid with advice from what you learned. What would you be telling a young kid coming into the league?
Not so much telling, just helping them along, you know, just if you have a warm room and not a jealous room, because if you're in a jealous room, it sucks and it rips a team apart, and just wanting the young guys to feel comfortable. And, that's all I.
What would you warn him against then? Saying in your experience, if you.
If the guys were acting up or whatever, maybe you'd say something. But they're all so hungry when they get there and want to play. It's just trying to keep their confidence up and make sure that they feel welcome and you know, give them advice here and there. But you know. One guy who came into Dallas as a rookie, Todd Harvey.
I remember Todd. He played in Edmonton.
Yeah, his nickname, in one day, he got the nickname Tenure from Dave Gagne because he, Tenure Vet. He goes, you're acting like a 10-year vet. So we called him 10-year. He gets picked up at the airport by our assistant general manager. And he's outside the airport with his bag smoking a cigarette. He's like all of 19 years old. And then that night after the game, he's got like a vodka soda in his hand and a cigarette. And he's sitting there like talking with his hands, you know. Like he's been in the league for 10 or 12 years. It was so funny because he's such a nice guy. Like you couldn't, wasn't a dick. It just, he was just being himself and that's who he was. And he became a hell of a player, but man, he came in and it, you know, if some guys wouldn't take a shine to that and they would be like all over him and they could gang up on him and bully him and verbally abuse him. But he just laughed it off. He had this great freaking smile. And laughed. He just laughed and he laughed. And I always, that's the one thing I did tell young guys. If they tease you, laugh. If you get upset, they're going to keep teasing you. So if they hammer you, just laugh. And eventually they'll go to somebody else. But if you can't handle it, oh boy, they're going to rip you apart.
Pile on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you're going to love about this girl. She's 18, demure, you know, just a tiny little thing. And yeah, speaking of 10-year veteran, what's really cool in her interview, you know, you get the sort of lame interview, you get the obvious, you know, tell us how you're feeling. This is incredible. Yeah. You done blah, blah, blah. And the kid's like, well, it's a dream come true. The fans got on my side, you know, they were really cheering for her. And then she said, which is kind of like a Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, I don't know, Conor McGregor thing to say. She goes, well, I'm just really here to put on a show for the fans.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And I was like, that a girl, 18 years old, you know, like talking like, you know, I just want to make sure I put on a good show.
Give everybody their money's worth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. So
good for her.
Anyway, Rusty, another good show. Another one in the books. If you like what you're hearing here, tell everyone all about it. And, we're going to be back each and every week with another episode of the Suspendables. Rusty,
yeah.
What advice would you give me for the week? Okay, you're a veteran.
Some advice. Listen to your daughter. Get back in the game, and keep wearing collared shirts. You're looking good.
Okay, my brother. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. You've been listening to me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and him, the most important guy, Russ Cortlandt, and this is The Suspendables.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Cortnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.